Thank you for finding this room. It took me a while to get here. My name is Uli Hohmann. I'm an architect in the cloud and enterprise business, and I have the pleasure to do two things. Welcome you again in Barcelona. Thank you. And talk about IoT from a platform perspective. So if you're looking for Arduino boards or other things, this is the wrong session. We are not going to light up little lamps and sending commands from the cloud today. We're going to talk about business. We're going to talk about architecture and the platform elements that make up the IoT strategy from a cloud perspective. We will talk about devices and how do we think about connecting those things, but this is a platform conversation, and as you know about platform demonstrations, it's like watching grass grow. So there's not much interesting things there, but once you have it in action, it's pretty interesting. So I'll introduce the topic and we walk us our way into the details of how the system will work or is already working. Because IoT, as lots of you know, or the Internet of Things, is only new for some of us. Because the industrial people have been doing connected plants and connected factories since forever. The automotive industry has been collecting data from their cars forever. And so there is a lot of reality in terms of connectivity already there. It's just not necessarily evenly distributed, as some people say. So let's start with a definition. This one, I think, is from our friends from Gartner, so it must be correct. If anybody is from Gartner, apologies for my sense of humor. So effectively thinking through how we take the internet of 20%, which is the people, to the internet of 100%, which is 80% of the things that are out there, how do we connect them? So how do we look at physical entities, get them into the system in terms of understanding who they are, where they are, what state they're in, and be able to control them in various ways and fashions. And it's about the physical things. These are not virtual things. These are the things you can possibly touch. So expect that everything and anything will be connected in the near future. Why? There are companies like our friends at Arm who are building chips for incredibly low cost that are smaller than the tip of my finger, and that cost less than $2, but have a full-blown operating system, crypto capability, and they have a wireless chip. So anything will be connectable at a very, very affordable cost. And from my perspective, that's going to go on and on and on. And you will see, I don't think connectedness will be a feature in 5 years that you will even think about. It's just going to be there as part of what people do and how it works. How does Microsoft look at things? The Internet of Things is interesting if you're Gartner or Microsoft or anybody else. But if you're yourself and you're looking at your home, your car, your work, you will effectively think about the Internet of Your Things. And the Internet of Your Things has effectively two dimensions to it. First of all, your things is always a point of view. Because if I'm a provider of a certain capability, I have a point of view on that capability. Let's say I'm a car manufacturer that actually is looking at the types of cars, the fleets. But you as a car owner have a view of the Internet of Things in terms of your car. And so the industry is still working through what are these views and how does it all work in terms of if you own the car, but I collect data of it as an OEM, how do we share the data? What's the privacy story? How do I make sure that you can control what data gets shared and what data doesn't get shared? So there's a lot of work going on in this area to make sure it's truly the Internet of Your Things. And again, multiple points of view. The two key investments that are still making this possible to the left is our friend Moore's Law. There is dead people that live longer. That's one of the sayings. Moore's Law has been called dead for a while, but for some reason, we keep on being able to increase the density of the transistors, sometimes through new materials, sometimes to change the strategy around transistors. Because it's not just about the density anymore, we just put different chips on the same thing. So we effectively increase the density, but with different capabilities on the same chip. And then I don't know if you have heard about Metcalfe's Law. Metcalfe's Law got formed when the Ethernet first came out. When the Ethernet first came out, people were effectively speculating that the value of the connected nodes would be, the square of the proportional to the square of the connected nodes with uniform capabilities. And currently, we estimate that by 2020-ish, 25 billion devices will be connected. When you think about the square of that, how many connections can we really drive, and what's the value of that connectedness that we can harvest? And understanding those can actually be very, very beneficial for any strategies that you might consider in your company in terms of how do you connect things. I've been talking to companies across the globe, little companies that, for example, do lighting systems, and they are the world leader in lighting systems in a little town in Austria. Never heard about the company before. My friends have, because they have expensive lighting systems, I guess. But these guys are starting to think about what sensors can I put into my light systems. If I have open lighting systems, meaning I control or I support the streets in Paris, for example, with my lighting systems, wouldn't it be nice if I had sensors in there that actually measure the pollution? So I don't have to put explicit sensors in there, because it's so cheap to just put it on the lamp. So the lamp's already there. So effectively, we are driving connectedness on the one side because it's there. And then we are adding a connection because we are looking at CO2 or other emissions coming from the system. In our areas, it is not that interesting. But I don't know if you have been to China. Certain areas of China are very, very hazardous to your health. So those kind of things are very important for those guys over there. Microsoft looks at the IoT, or Internet of Your Things, from bottom to the top in a number of dimensions. Of course, we are looking at various use cases, if you think about it. So smart building automation, smart home automation, the difference between a building and a home is obvious, I guess, retail kiosk and so forth, and a number of sensors with different capabilities. And those sensors sometimes connect directly. We have seen a lot of people express desires to connect even the smallest thing directly to the internet, because having a hub or a gateway involved sometimes is complicated, not necessarily in a professional setting, but in a home setting. But there will also be gateways that effectively aggregate stuff and send information to a place. Currently, we think of this as the cloud, but we will see how that pans out in terms of real deployments. These are just some example applications. So monitoring, remote access is a very big one. I've spent a lot of time with manufacturing people that say, hey, I really don't want to send Fred on a plane to God knows where if I could effectively just remote log in into the system that I own or that I manage to debug. Content distribution, configuration management, or asset management, a very big one. And then various applications to consume the data and the system information that you're gathering. And then, of course, thinking about this from a vertical perspective. So there will be energy solutions, there will be water solutions, there will be other things. And then you will see crossover. If you're doing a connected car or a smart car system, then if you get home or to work, what if the car can start to understand to connect to the Wi-Fi system at work or at home and change its configuration settings, start to change the data it sends? If it's on the road at, let's say, G2 or G3, maybe LTE, it can send a certain set of information. But as soon as it gets home and connects to the Wi-Fi, it starts to really send a lot of information. So thinking through how you apply networking detection and sensing is another important piece that's part of this thing. So don't think that these pieces are going to be siloed all the time. There's a lot of crossover that we're seeing from various industries and various places. The other piece that we believe in very strongly is that IoT, the Internet of Things, is on the one side, yes, I want to connect a thing, possibly take its data, put it into some place for analysis and so forth. But you really want to do this in a 360 degree. A lot of people spend a lot of time here where they're saying, hey, I want to inform my partners. I want to inform my designers. I want to inform engineering about the real stuff that's happening, not what we think it's happening, but what's going to really happening. Let me give you a real example of how that works. So a thing could actually be a Windows PC. A Windows PC has been a connected device since quite some time. I know most of you will ignore Watson, So if it says, hey, I would like to send some error report to Microsoft, you say, don't do that. But it's incredibly useful. But because we use those error reports without knowing what your IP addresses are and names and whatnot to effectively prioritize the bugs we're going to fix. In pre-Watson days, we kind of took a guess. What should we be fixing? What bugs are important to fix? With Watson, we effectively prioritize two things. We always look at the top 10 reports of the most affected customers, meaning if it's affecting everybody, we fix it first, and then we go down the list. And so think of that kind of connectivity, where is it going, as the piece where you really want design and engineering going in. We've worked with car manufacturers that saying we really want to know what the braking behavior is, and not in every 6 months when the person comes in to a service checkup. We want to really know this in real time or near real time, because we want to look at what can we do to prevent the brakes to fail and stuff like that. So that's a very obvious part. But on the other side, you're also looking at the demand side of the chain. How can you use that data to send signals to your dealers, to your partners, that effectively are driving demand for your thing? Sometimes you will have to think about how do I combine information from the system and, let's say, Google or Bing or other search engines that will give you signals that says, here's what people have been looking at. And you can combine sometimes understanding of how do I look at the data from the thing, let's say the automation system here, or the systems that are providing me with demand signals. So think about this as a 360-degree opportunity. Your entry point will vary. Most people will start here, thinking about suppliers, engineering, and so forth, maybe some new customer service opportunities. But a lot of people will end up here as well to really drive the conversation about how do I make your life better by building a better product, but also to interpret the demand signal better and more dynamically. The way we look at this is you start off with devices that you have somewhere connected. And a lot of people have devices deployed that they're now trying to connect. I don't know if you've seen the videos of our ISS team where they talk about ThyssenKrupp elevators. The ThyssenKrupp elevator company is trying to figure out a way to improve uptime of the elevators, because that's the number one thing that they're getting punished for from their customers. Because if the elevator is down in a hospital, in a building, of course you're somewhat unhappy as a building owner. And so what they're trying to do is connect not new elevators. That's relatively easy. But they have a million elevators deployed across the globe. And they're trying to figure out how to connect those existing elevators without, of course, ripping the elevator out and put a new one in. That doesn't quite work. Another company that we're working with is a company called Grundfos. Grundfos is a Danish company. They build pumps. They have deployed 12 million pumps so far around the globe. And they want to connect all of those to effectively drive the innovation and getting real-time data from other people. So always think it's easy to do new stuff, and it's harder to do older or existing deployed stuff. But most of the IoT initiatives that will make money will actually go after the existing brownfield implementation and figure out a way to effectively add connectivity to existing systems as much as feasible and start bringing data back. It is not sexy like wearables, but wearables, just in case anybody is confused, make no money right now. They are very, very cool for press, but they really don't help at this point in time outside of fitness and some other things. That will change, but not right now, not right now. And then, of course, you start looking at the data. The IoT game, as we will later see, is all about data. It's not about, yep, I want to control the system. Yes, that is a side effect. But at the end of the day, you're trying to learn more what's really going on, and you're trying to put insights out there that say, if I devised this system a little bit better, whatever better means, I can either spend less money, demand more money, or make my customer's life happier. That's really what's happening at the end of the day. And then we're starting here on the what we call the cold path, meaning we're putting data into storage. A lot of people are doing this by now. And then we apply various technologies like machine learning, Hadoop, and others to do what we call cold path analysis and really digging deep into the existing data. And then we're adding capabilities to do what we call the hot path, meaning we are looking at the event stream as events pour in and apply rules and commands capabilities to effectively look at the system in real time. If you're a real-time person from the industrial real-time, nobody in this room does real-time, but really enough time, let's call it that, and really start to say, if the system behaves in this certain way, then do something. Shut the system down, send a command down to calm it down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is a cold path and there is a hot path from an architecture perspective. And of course, you're trying to figure out how to use that data to do better things. If it's better service, higher uptime, better partnership with your partner systems and so forth, using various tools from Microsoft and other companies, obviously. Let's talk about business models. At the end of the day, all of us are somehow interested in making money or doing a better service, depending on where you come from. A government person generally doesn't care about money, but they want to provide better services. And there are really two business models that so far have been emerging as part of this entire IoT conversation. I've been having conversations since 18 months about this topic, and those are the two that at the end of the day always emerge. Either I provide better insights. I'm trying to get to a point where the data collection I'm driving helps me provide better service, higher uptime, inform my field engineers better, whatever the thing might be, in order to drive down either costs or improve my value that I give out. And so always think that when you think about people saying it's all about data, that's true, but nobody sells data. Actually, in fact, people will hide the data as much as they can because there's a lot of IP in there or dirty underwear, I don't know, sometimes. So what you always do is you run through the data with some algorithm or some analysis, and you're selling the insight. I've seen that the braking behavior in this type of car in this location always tends to be like that. And you can talk to the dealers to run, for example, campaigns that make it attractive for that specific location, for that specific car to run a braking special, because this is always the way it works. So you don't give them the details, let's say that I, driving a very fancy car, very badly in terms of very aggressively, so that I'm effectively a target for them. I gave a speech last week in Detroit at the annual event or the biannual event called Convergence. And the way I set it to them is, look, at the end of the day, what we're all trying to get to is the brand of one. I still will buy, of course, a mass-produced thing, but this thing will start to behave around what I behave. Meaning, if I start at 7 o'clock in the morning, it will effectively know, and ideally the car will warm up already without me having to turn it on. If it knows that I will actually rip my brakes apart every 20,000 miles, then it will warn me to say, hey, go to the dealer, here's a deal, go for it and get a new thing. So those are some of the insights that we effectively are seeing. So think about how you can sell more money. So I've told this story in a different context, but it still is relevant in here. UPS, everybody knows, I assume, the brown trucks running around, they actually have a joint venture with a mortgage company. You're like, what? Mortgage company? Why would they do that? Well, they are collecting a lot of data about the value of goods that go into a certain zip code and the value of goods that are coming out. So from there, you can actually build risk models that allow a mortgage company to determine quicker and faster to say, this guy in this zip code will most likely be a safer bet than a person from another zip code. It's only one indicator, obviously, but it certainly is one of those. So always think about what can I do with the stuff that I already have or that I'm starting to gather for new scenarios, new customers, new businesses. The other piece that is emerging quite heavily is the discussion about privacy. Mentioned it before, that's a Internet of Your Things question. Especially in Europe, I heard some German talking. The Germans are especially concerned about privacy and data and so forth, and rightfully so to a degree. But let's not be confused. If the NSA wants your data, you can hide wherever you want. They will find it. So from that perspective, I think it's a good conversation to have, and there's the industry needs to do more. But let's also not get confused about what is going to happen. So there is a bunch of interesting standards going on that I recommend if you're interested in this business and collecting a lot of data. There are two strategies to think about. One is effectively anonymization at the edge. So for example, our friends from Skype, they collect telemetry information about call quality, but they will effectively rip all the personal information off before they send a telemetry package back to the cloud. So no phone numbers, no nothing is being stored or even sent from the edge device, meaning your phone, to the cloud. Other people do the same thing. Other people put all the PII information into the cloud, and that's the other reason why you want to sell insights and not data, because personal identifiable information is very sensitive, so you've got to be careful. And there's a new standard that Microsoft and other people from the ISO community are pushing. It's ISO 27018, if you're interested. That's effectively a big data PII processing standard that will tell you what your responsibilities are you're taking on when you are processing PII or big data in the cloud, or in your own cloud or our cloud. It doesn't really matter. The other piece that we are seeing is what I call the GE model. Most of you will have heard that the GE aerospace company, most of the engines are not sold anymore. So there are some companies that still buy engines, but most companies actually buy thrust per hour. So our friends from GE don't sell you the engine anymore. They sell you thrust per hour. And they effectively measure it, and they have, by now, I have no idea, as far as I know, an A380, I think, collects about 30 terabytes of data per flight. I don't know how much of that is engine data, but there is a lot of data being collected by these guys. And GE is effectively selling you an outcome. They're not selling you a thing anymore, the engine. They're selling you an outcome. And however they achieve that outcome, that's GE's business. Meaning, if you're thinking about a model like this, then you have ways to say, hey, I can give you a cheaper engine for the same outcome, which means my margin is higher. Or I can change the fuel mix because I understand what's going on and you have been running it too hot. Whatever the thing might be, you can effectively manipulate a lot of scenarios and a lot of variables if you sell an outcome. There's, of course, risk. If you don't understand your business and you actually have to run a higher fuel mix to just stay in this example, then you lose money. So there is a big game to be played. And again, the person who has a lot of data, a lot of insight about his or her business, and has the right tools, be that machine learning, be that advanced computational analytics, will win this game. But the industry is all up moving into this direction. A lot of companies I've talked to are trying to figure out, how do I not sell the widget anymore? Because then I'm a vendor. What I'm trying to become is a big part of this company's, my customer's business, so I'm trying to sell them an outcome, not a widget. One of those guys is Kronos Industries. So we have done a prototype with these guys, a proof of concept, which I think is going into production soon, where these guys are the number one, as far as I can tell, in the bottling industry. So if you're in the bottling industry, you're building Coke or beer or whatever it is, these guys might be a partner of yours. And these guys are trying to sell you outcomes. I have no idea how many thousands of bottles per day, per hour, and it's their job to make that run as fast or as cheap as possible from their perspective, as long as they meet the SLA. And that's really the big business transformation that we are seeing. So two dimensions. One is I want to make money off the data or the insights I'm collecting. And business model two, I want to change from selling you a widget to selling you an outcome. If you think about the parallels, Azure or AWS or Google and so forth, we are all changing the IT business from me as Microsoft selling you a package to selling you an outcome. I'm selling you compute, not network and storage, at a given SLA and so forth. So that's the same kind of game that we have been playing in terms of Microsoft and AWS and so forth, is now getting over into the industrial automation and other places. And you will see other companies. I know, for example, Hitachi is offering you to update their, let's say, Microsoft campus, not for free per se, but for a very attractive price, for an annuity business. As so we, when we save energy, let's say 20%, they get 2% of that saving. So that's another way to think about the outcome-driven business rather than a widget business. Let's talk about architecture considerations, because you guys are techie and not just business guys, right? So this is a stack that we are currently implementing in various ways in various scenarios. It might not be the ultimate stack in terms of that's what we're ending up with, but think of this as a thing that runs on an endpoint and connecting to another endpoint. The endpoint being a device or a sensor, and the endpoint being a cloud infrastructure. If that cloud runs on your premise or in my data centers, different conversation. Underneath here, TCP, UDP, no problem, standard stuff. But there's actually a lot of non-IP stuff out there. So if you know the home stuff like Zigbee and other protocols, those are the non-IP gateways or non-IP that we're talking about here. And the new next generation operating systems will support that kind of bridging from non-IP to IP, so they will act as local gateways to devices like Zigbee-capable devices and so forth. On the messaging side, everybody assumes that HTTP and HTTPS are going to be the default. That might well be true, but just between us girls, and since this is not broadcasted, of course it is, but HTTP is a terrible protocol. It has one redeeming feature. It is supposedly firewall friendly, meaning you can put a herd of elephants through the firewall called port 80 or 443, depending on how you do it, because that's what you have opened and that's what everybody funnels their stuff through. But from a messaging perspective, it is very, very inefficient. And anybody who tells you that HTTP, for example, is bidirectional, it's not true, because we actually have to poll all the time between the various HTTP endpoints. You might still choose it because it is very widespread and it's everywhere, but it is very inefficient. So Microsoft is investing in AMQP. It stands for Asynchronous Message Queuing Protocol. If you want the details, talk to my friend Clemens. He is going to present on Friday, the last session, to talk about Event Hub, which will also support AMQP. AMQP is bidirectional and is also very efficient and is everywhere as well. So we have, for example, got AMQP running on a custom Linux on Raspberry Pi with Proton C as a library. So that's as small as you can get in terms of endpoint. Then IBM and other people are looking at MQTT. We are going to invest in that as well. So that's another protocol that's emerging. Then there are things like CoAP. And then there's a lot of custom stuff. Everybody in the industrial automation has written their own protocol. And part of this is Microsoft is committed to provide you platform infrastructure. You will see it later. That allows you to effectively hook up any protocol from your endpoint to the cloud and then provide you with an architecture that normalizes the flows into the cloud value system, meaning BI, big data, and all this other stuff. But you don't have to rip the existing stuff out in order to gain the benefits of a cloud or a big data platform. So think of custom as the thing that somebody has already done, and we need to be able to hook it up. There's a lot of examples I could cite where we are working with customers that have existing protocols from home automation all the way to big industrial automation. Security, so there's TLS as the transport layer, security layer, and then there's PSK, which is pre-shared keys. That's another thing that we're seeing quite often, that if the system is very small with little capability, for example, no TPM chip and others, that people revert to PSK, which is secure, but of course it's a weaker form of security than a TPM chip. And then you of course have hardware-based security, which is TLS backed by a TPM. All Windows systems and most, or if not all Linux systems by now that have capabilities support this. And I personally think that this here is more of a legacy protocol in a lot of ways, where this here will become more common with the next generation chipsets. Because as I mentioned, our friends from ARM, for example, their next generation chipset will have TPM capabilities on even the very tiniest device. So So I think this one here will go away over time, but it is out there and needs to be supported. Then serialization. So JSON is clear. BSON is effectively linked to AMQP. It's a binary protocol that's used to transport bits. Apache Evro is an outcome of the Google protobuf effort, if you've heard about that. Effectively, binary transport, very highly efficient, being used by Google, by us internally, and others. And so there is now an Apache open source project that we are looking into also to see how we can support it. And then there's custom encodings as well. So people have been playing around with either XML, which is the worst from a verbosity perspective, but it's out there. And so there are certain industries where XML is the standard. And so we need to support that. And somebody came up with clever ideas and will come up with clever ideas. And so there is a way for you to plug in a custom encoding protocol as well. On the data side, it ranges from very, very simple name-value pairs. If you have a thermostat that understands two things, on-off and temperature setting, you don't need a complex model for that. You effectively just put a name-value pair out there. And then there is very, all the way to schematized models. All-join, so Microsoft has joined the all-join community right now. We don't know it's exactly how we are going to support it, but that will be coming. But from a model perspective, there's all-join, there's thread, there's all sorts of other things coming along that effectively model the capability of your device and either put it in code and you load it up into the cloud and saying, hey, when I'm connecting this light bulb, I'm sending a model of the capabilities of the bulb up there. Or you can effectively send the model down from the cloud to say, I'm going to register this light bulb, and anything that comes up with a device ID of X will be effectively joining or getting this model. And again, there is no right answer. It really depends on how your system works and how you want to do this. Smart edge services, a lot of stuff will happen at the edge. It's not all going to be sent everything in the cloud, and there we will process things. In fact, I talked yesterday to a manufacturing company. They have a gateway in their plant, and the gateway processes, filters, aggregates, and does all sorts of things, and only aggregated stuff goes into the cloud. Sending a heartbeat every 5 minutes from 1,000 devices that I'm okay, and storing that in the cloud is not really interesting. So there's a lot of value that smart edge services can do. One of the things, for example, is network condition detection. I remember I mentioned the car stuff where you are on 2G, where you send only what's necessary, and when you are in range of a Wi-Fi point, you hook up and you send all sorts of stuff. And so in Windows and other higher-end operating systems, most likely we'll find smart edge services built into the operating system over time. In lower-end systems or custom systems, you would have to build it themselves. And again, always remember, and again, you guys are in Europe, so you know, connectivity is not always there, and it's not free. In the US, it's a bit different. People think that connectivity is always there, and it's free. But if you go into various countries, it's not true. Even Germany, as far as I recall, doesn't have cell phone coverage for all of Germany until 2018. Again, I'm sure it's pretty remote areas, but it's still not covered even in a country that is supposedly sophisticated. And then on top of this, there are management protocols that are being discussed or implemented. One of them is OMADM. So OMA stands for Open Management Alliance. So it's an open standard. And OMADM is the desktop management or device management scenario. That's a higher end implementation, meaning more features, more complexity, but also more requirements on the edge. OMADM, for example, is supported by Windows 8.1 out of the box. So there is a DMA agent already installed in Windows that you can use to control and manage Windows if you have the rights. And then OMA M2M is another one that's emerging. It's also sometimes referred to as OMA lightweight because it is simplified for simpler devices. So if you think about DM, rich, complex devices, M2M, let's say a light bulb or a thermostat, things with lesser capabilities, so you don't need a complex management protocol. These will not be the only ones. These are only the ones we at Microsoft are looking at right now. One we're already implementing in the Windows standard in the core, And one, we're looking at how do we support them in the all-up IoT space, because it's going to be important. So these are the layers that we think need to be synchronized between the edge endpoint and the cloud point, whatever the cloud looks like. And of course, if you build your own infrastructure, you can pick and choose, meaning you don't have to implement all of this. You can say, I only support Apache Avro, I will support AMQP, and then you pick the technology that supports it. The service bus team supports AMQP today. They're looking at other standards here as well as part of the IoT push for the messaging infrastructure. And that's the key one. I mentioned it a number of times. What we're really trying to do is get data from that environment so that we can look at it. And always remember, today's noise is tomorrow's insight. Let me give you an example. It has nothing to do with IoT, but in the 70s, people were collecting DNA samples, and they had no way of processing them because there was no compute power available to do it. So they put them on microfiche and put them away. And I think 3-4 years ago, they found, quote-unquote, this microfiche, and they put an algorithm together on AWS at the time and were running the sequencing to really understand what's going on. And they found new genomic defects that were could have been known in the 70s if they had the compute power. The story I'm trying to tell you here is a lot of companies I'm talking to are looking at what do I store? What decisions do I make? And the answer is you really have no idea, because what you think is not valuable might over time become valuable. And so part of the conversation that each of you have to have if you want to implement IoT, what is your storage strategy? If you pick a non-public cloud and storage environment, you have to think about how you store all that stuff. SAN, for example, God bless him, is very expensive, especially when you look at the high-end SANs that I see most of my enterprise customers deploying. So you will not put petabytes of stuff on there that you have no idea what the value is. So my boss and my boss's boss love to talk about ambient intelligence. This is about ambient intelligence because you have no clue what the value of the data is going to be. Because you might not have the algorithm, you might not know what it really means, and so forth. So how do you effectively drive the inside? Our job in the public cloud is to give you a storage environment where you don't have to make those decisions. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting very, very close, so that you can store as much as you want. Telemetry will become ubiquitous. I'm not going to read all this stuff. But part of this is how do you think about data? Data as telemetry in terms of your applications, data as telemetry in anything you deploy out there, if it's a pump, if it's an elevator, if it's something else. You need to think about how do you put data about what's going on and what's the state of the system is, so that you can really drive the application knowledge and the insight that will fuel your business over time. That means we have to start thinking about events and eventing. If you hear anything this week, we are doing three things in the public cloud. One, we are extending the communication capabilities to include more protocols like MQTT and others. And we're starting to really build out a eventing strategy from Event Hub to Azure Stream Analytics, support for Storm, and other things, so that you can really start to say, hey, what's going on here? Here is just an example of a game called Halo that effectively sends events. The point of this is that you can't really assume it's a steady stream. Depending on what's going on, depending on how you configure things, I might send less or more information depending on the state of the system. So being able to consume this in variable ways, meaning elastic, is one of the things you got to look at as part of an architecture. The other piece is event velocity. So for example, the next generation Halo, as a game engine, thinks they need 1 million events per second as a capacity in one scale unit. We have systems that will process 10 billion events per day. Sending telemetry into the cloud for operational analysis in terms of how we're doing and so forth. So, and personally, I think we have just seen the beginning, because people, once they start to see the value of the data, they will go apeshit, because that's what happens. So we, for example, built for Bing a telemetry system, what people have been doing and what the relevance of the query was. And initially, there were 25 people using that data. Now that data is up to 1 exabyte. It's running on 110,000 servers and has 6,000 people using it every day to shape the strategy and the environment called Bing as a search engine. So once you have the data, the demand will grow and people will go, I need this in real time. I need this faster. Give me more data. We already mentioned this. Again, I personally think this $10 billion is going to be very conservative. I think even Gartner and others are revising the numbers continuously because it's becoming so cheap to connect stuff. We will see what the telecom networks will do once everything is a 4G LTE device, if they can handle the capacity. But that's certainly one of the things that's happening right now. From a lifecycle perspective, think about events, telemetry, designing, sending them. We talked about smart network services. You can't send everything over a 2G. That won't work. So you got to think about what are my capabilities. You got to think about the transport. We talked already about that, AMQP, HTTP, MQTT, whatever. You got to ingest it. While it sounds easy to connect a million devices, that's a very complex thing. And doing it without having a sprawl of infrastructure everywhere that deals with this thing. So that's something to think about. And then consuming it using standardized environment, including real time. We talked about the hot and the cold path, and then drive insights to consumption. And then, of course, the cycle back, which is sending commands back to the system. So there is another business model that people are looking at, which is selling the command plane. So if you are, let's say you have a thermostat business, and you are making a deal with a power utility company that says, if the grid is under pressure, I can actually push onto the smart home and, let's say, decrease the air conditioning capability, so increase the temperature, so that it's not down to, let's say, 70 degrees Fahrenheit, it's actually to 75. This 5-degree difference might save the grid from having brownouts or other trouble. So we're seeing a bunch of that kind of stuff coming online as well. Collect, analyze, consume. We talked already about this, but part of this is think about real-time historical. So for example, I don't know if we have officially announced the Azure Stream Analytics called NRT. I think we did today or last week. And they can actually combine real-time information and historical information in the analysis streams. So you can really look at the data from the past and the data that you have today in terms of understanding the stream and what's going on. You can drive aggregation. You can do joins across streams. You can say, hey, let me see what my thermostats from the house, the rooms do. And then I can say, as long as all the thermostats are doing fine, I can effectively say the house is good, or I can see actually combinations of patterns that point out that the water heater might have a problem because it is getting colder slowly but surely across the number of rooms. And then, of course, the predictive analytics piece. At some point in time in Redmond, whenever there is a new hip thing coming up, the next hip thing is graph processing, by the way. So if you have seen Office Delve or Cortana, you will see where that is going. But for a while, machine learning was the answer to the question. Whatever the question was, machine learning. It is very, very exciting, to be very clear, because machine learning, algorithmic computing against data, allows you to start to really drive into the data without having previously understood the data. And Azure ML, which I'm sure is being talked about a lot here, will give you a tool set that will enable you to do a number of these things. So social network analysis is a different form of signal, but a lot of people are looking at what is my sentiment if I launch a product, or what are people saying about Microsoft or my company or something else, weather forecasting and so forth, and then, of course, a lot of the scenarios. The key thing to think about is, when you try and learn a lot of things and you're doing a bunch of analysis and predicting things, just be aware of the Minority Report. You remember that movie? Mr. Cruise doing all sorts of things? We are getting to the point where predictions can be made that are very, very creepy. So I've had to talk a customer out of a scenario. I'll tell you so that you don't do this right away. It will come over time, I guess, but not right now, I would say. So there is the proposal in retail that if you check in with your loyalty card now on your phone rather than in your hand, you effectively go into the store and it will say, okay, I'll start tracking you. Because I have the data that you have been purchasing, I will effectively also RFID everything you put into the shopping basket. And then I will tell you right before you check out, hey, Fred, you normally buy milk on Tuesdays. You don't have any milk in your shopping basket. Would you mind? There's a special here, there, and though. I'm sure that is an interesting scenario for some, but I for sure wouldn't really like the system telling me that if my behavioral pattern does look like this, and so go from there. So I think predicting things, because unfortunately for us, we are all creatures of habit. We are very, very predictable, unfortunately. That's why these things are very, very useful, and done right, they make a lot of sense, but always be aware of the minority report. That's the kind of factor I have in my head, where people go a little bit too far. And again, that will change. The other piece that people always overestimate is, I need to do fancy analytics before I can get any value. If I don't do predictive analytics, my IoT strategy is no good. The number one request is simple graphs. Show me what's going on in a dashboard and so forth, because a system like an elevator, let's say, deployed in a hospital today is not talking to me. Now it is talking to me. Just show me the data. So investing in simple BI, here is a picture of Power BI that is part of Office 365, which I'm sure some of you will have at least have seen, that simply shows you a number of graphs and representation of data. So you don't have to go all crazy with Hadoop and machine learning to get value out of connected data and connected things. BI will do just fine. So start with BI and then go from there. And always think about the Internet of your things here. Especially on this side, there's really some interesting opportunities for you to differentiate. Because if I get my personal data, let's say I'm the hospital person that manages the hospital, I get an overview of all the elevators that I have in my system. If I'm a field engineer for ThyssenKrupp elevator, it would be great if I get the status of all the elevators I'm responsible for. Not every elevator out there, just the ones that I care about, and so forth. So those are some of the opportunities that I think are very low-hanging once you have connected the system and are collecting data. Now, what does this mean for the platform? Again, we talked about event management, the service bus or event hubs, which is a specialization of the service bus. So if you are a service bus fan, it effectively is a special restricted code base. So we took a lot of the filtering and routing capabilities and dumbed them down so that they'd be processed faster, because the service bus has a lot of flexibility, and Event Hub is effectively saying we will sacrifice some of this flexibility in order to drive speed. I mentioned the 1 million events per second per scale unit. That's currently our goal, to ship, and we actually have shipped last week, an engine that's capable to take 1 KB events, 1 million times a second, and process them with authentication and so forth. And then, of course, think about other elements. We talked about the call path. We talked about the protocols. And then, of course, integrating with Salesforce, with SAP, with Dynamics, with other investments you have made to drive business processes. So don't reinvent business processes. Enable them with new scenarios. So, for example, one of the things that ThyssenKrupp is doing as an elevator company, they are effectively monitoring the elevators now, at least some of them, and they are effectively putting data into a predictive model, and they are predicting to, I think, 85% probability when the elevator is failing. So what they're now doing is they're sending an alert when they predict, it's getting close, to their CRM system and effectively sending a field engineer automatically out there before the elevator fails so that they can go in and repair, fix whatever they need to fix before the elevator stops. which is, again, the goal of their exercise. Here's a path through the system. Think about a truck going to Event Hub. So again, the truck is connected most likely over a 3G or GMS network, GSM network, and sending information from various subsystems. Could be one, could be multiple. A truck is a very, very complex system. If you're in the business, you know. If you don't, a truck is way more complicated than a car. They have so many configuration options, it's actually frightening. And lots of information being sent. You're sending it over the Event Hub. Here, in this case, you store it in Azure Document DB, and you use HD Insight and to process it and use web services or websites to effectively publish the information. That's one path through the system. We will also support, as Microsoft, while we will tell you the Event Hub is the answer to the question, I'm sure some of you have invested in Kafka, so we will also put Kafka in here as an event ingestion option. And while we will tell you that Azure NRT, which is Stream Analytics, is a great option, there will also be Storm, Hadoop Storm, as part of the option as well. So if you have invested in open source as a strategy and you're using it, Azure will clearly support both on the transformation side as well as on the ingestion side, open source options. So if you don't like DocumentDB, use MongoDB or CouchDB, whatever the open source DB is you might want to use based upon your investment strategy. I'm not going to go through all of this, but this is something that I would suggest you spend time on in terms of how do you think about telemetry. We talked about that already, not needed to go through it again. Then notifications are effectively things which you target your humans with. Generally, devices can be smart as well, so you can send them commands, but we call them commands and not notifications. But notifications are for humans. You can send human information one-on-one to say, hey, field engineer, your elevator XYZ is about to go down. Or you can target a group of people. If you have not seen the notification hubs or the Azure mobile services with the notification capabilities, that might be useful to spend time on. And of course, independent of operating system. If you're an Android user, Windows user, or Apple user, the events will find you, or the notifications. Those are all independent of operating system. And then command, control, and querying the system in real time. Heterogeneity. This stuff will have all operating systems on known and unknown, because there will be lots of custom stuff before as well. So Microsoft will support out of the box Windows, of course, and the variations in terms of CE and embedded and so forth. But we will also support Linux, Android, Apple, and custom. So there will be open source versions of connection capabilities that we will put out into the market so that you can say, well, I have a custom OS. It's Linux. It's a Linux derivative, but it's custom. I'll take the connectivity capabilities and can start integrating whatever that thing is into the public cloud. Again, addressability, that's a very complex area around networking. How do you deal with firewalls, with netting, and so forth? Security, lots of interesting things there. One of the key strategy elements that we are currently proposing and certainly recommending is that devices don't have inbound ports open. So we call that service-assisted connectivity, where the client effectively goes to the cloud as an outbound port and effectively starts to ask for help. And the cloud will do the defending and do the connectivity, and only the client can connect, and then we can send information back and forth. That's also called the inbox-outbox pattern, because I have an inbox for each device on my cloud, and I have an outbox for the cloud. So if I get a command that somebody wants to send to the device, I will buffer it and send it to the device when the device next connects. One key thing there is time to live. You don't want to have the car door open when you suddenly get connectivity, but you are at 160 kilometers an hour. So that's not a good idea. So time to live is important, and conditions are also important. So if you imply or use the inbox-outbox pattern, always apply time to live to the commands that you're sending to the thing, and so forth. And then, of course, scale. I mentioned Grundfos before, and the guys were not joking. They were not even batting an eyelash when they said, yeah, we want to connect 12 million devices. I know most of you are from the enterprise environment, so you say, if I have 100,000 desktops and I have to deploy and upgrade them, that's a huge project. And everybody is kind of very happy when they're connected and upgraded 100,000 desktops. Now think about this, that somebody, very tiny company in Denmark, thinks, yeah, sure, 12 million devices, no problem. So we will hear those numbers more and more. It doesn't mean that's reality today, but it's going to happen very, very fast. And thinking through how you manage that is something to always consider before you make investments, how you want to do that. A lot of companies are still private cloud people. They're saying, no, no, it's running in my data center. Fair enough. We support that as part of our hybrid strategy. But think about 12 million devices connecting to your data center through some networking infrastructure. Let me get you into a little secret. This cloud computing thing, most people talk about the data centers because those are very sexy and big. I'm sure Jason this morning showed football fields of data centers with 600,000 servers, blah, blah. I'm sure, because that's the latest set of slides we always use when we talk about the cloud. That's only half of the story. The other half, the more important half, is networking. Microsoft, Google are very, very big network operators by now. So on the one side, we lease MPLS networks that other telco providers offer. But we, for example, lay our own cable between the East Coast and the West Coast, the dark fiber. And we just, for example, purchased a part of the new undersea cable that's going from the US to Brazil. So the whole thing around cloud computing is effectively network computing. Some of you are old enough. You remember Sun? In the late 90s, they had this little slogan there where they said, the network is the computer. They were right, but they were too early, meaning nobody really was there yet. And the second one, they aimed too low, because we're now thinking about the cloud and the globe as our network and our computer. So when you think about this IoT stuff, always think about networking first, because latency, volume, and those kind of things will make a big, big difference. I'm working with customers that have a solution today running in North America, but because they want to open business in China, I'm migrating all of that stuff to Azure because we happen to have a Chinese public cloud. Then the next, they want to go to Brazil and then other places as well. So always think about where are these things, how are they connected, and how much stuff will they be sending from the endpoint that they have, and so forth. Let's go a little bit into Event Hub. Again, Clemens will give a detailed session about the technology on Friday evening. But we effectively produce events. I talked already about the various protocols and the various elements. And again, here is the custom cloud gateway visualized as part of this. There's also field gateways, as I mentioned before. We just use an example here, Raspberry Pi, to connect sensors that use Zigbee or some other protocol to IP, and then sending it up into Event Hub. As I said, it's a specialization of the service bus, so it has the same capabilities of queuing and so forth, and distribution. And then you will effectively be able to consume these events. The default pairing will be Event Hub and real-time analytics, stream analytics, Azure NRT or Storm. And then the other default will be storage adapter. So if you're not ready yet for real-time processing of events, most of the time what people do is they connect them to the cloud, consume them, and dump them into storage, and then figure out what to do with this data once they have enough collected in order to drive it. But again, the hot path goes from, let's say, a legacy system to the custom cloud gateway to Event Hub to, let's say, Storm, and then we persisted or we send it using the service bus to an SIP system on-premise in an enriched form or whatever the scenario might be, and then I can visualize and drive it into a consumption system. And of course, Event Hub doesn't show this, but the way back. I can send commands, alerts, events back into the system in order to drive more behavior. NRT, again, just a small deep dive. I'm sure they have stream analytics sessions here. I actually don't know if they're calling it NRT or stream analytics here, so you should look at it. And effectively, it allows you to do joins. If you haven't looked at stream analytics at all, stream processing, let me give you the definition. It's actually a cute one, so you might get a kick out of this one. So how many of you are SQL people? All of you, right? You know SQL. Cool. So when you have the job to stand at an autobahn and count red cars for 5 minutes, if you do it the SQL way, you effectively block the autobahn, take all the traffic for 5 minutes and divert it to a parking lot, and then you effectively go around and count the cars, because that's what SQL does. You actually bring the query to the data, and then you bring look at the data and saying what matches. If you do it using streams, you effectively put a query over the data as it flows by, and you're looking for patterns. So you're looking, found a red one. You count plus one, found a red one, plus two, et cetera, et cetera. So stream analytics are effectively bring the query to the data and look for patterns. And you're trying to build up intelligence that says, oh, if the temperature in my nuclear reactor changes over microseconds or whatever in terms in a certain way, I want to react to that in real time, not sometime. And that's what's really interesting about these things. The interesting thing that the NRT team has done over Stream Insight that we ship as part of SQL Server, we are now moving to a SQL-based dialect. So if you know SQL, you will be able to write real-time analytics queries where we have just edited the time dimensions, because time is very important. You want to see what happened the last 5 minutes, or what happened 5 minutes ago, or show me the windows in terms of I've seen it for 30 minutes, let me see the next 30 minutes, and then I make decisions, and so forth. And then you can correlate it with other systems, integrate things like machine learning and so forth. And you've seen this story before. You can put outputs like storage, but here's also another output guy where on the input we have Event Hub, and on the output we have Event Hub. So you're effectively pushing events through the system, and you enrich them at the same time. So you're getting a raw event from a device, and you're sending an alert back over the Event Hub, and let's say you have a CRM system taking up that alert, because your system told you only, hey, it's an alert. I have no idea what to do with it. So there's another system that effectively deals with the specific alerting and so forth. And again, here are the various consumers. If you don't want to consume anything, just dump them. But the idea is that you build a recursive system if you want to. So events flowing through the system and getting enriched, they could actually go here, come back here, and go back in here. Because you're seeing a simple event, and then you're understanding more data, you're creating a more complex event, maybe from a yellow alert to red alert, those kind of things, based upon additional data that you're collecting from this system or other systems. That's really the way the streaming architecture works, and that's how we look at IoT from a hot path perspective. How do you analyze that stuff? Again, not going through this again, except that we're also doing a bunch of work on, if you want to, how would you integrate your value stream, let's say your insights, into public systems. Cortana, which I'm sure some of you have seen, maybe some of you use Siri, Google Now, similar idea. They're going to get very, very smart. And some of that smartness will come from IoT things, be it your home, be it your car, be it other things. Again, always in light of the privacy and security, so what are you willing to share? But as I mentioned before, it would be really cool if Cortana, which knows my schedule, would be able to control my car, to say, hey, car, get the oil warm, because Uli has a meeting at 7, and he's going to leave the house at 6:45, stuff like that. So you will see those kind of crossover scenarios where the personal assistant, be it Google, be it Cortana or Siri, will start to control things on your behalf. It's not quite there yet, but we're getting very, very close. If you have seen some of the work in that area. Of course, feel free to code in whatever you want. One thing that's not here, which is actually going to be a very important language, is C++ or C. It's really funny. For a while, C was deader as yesterday's fish. But now C is back and C++ because we're getting very, very small, and the smallest runtime that we have is a C runtime. So I can code again, based back to the roots. But of course, we will see .NET. Steve Tejera is doing a Windows IoT talk I don't know when, but he's going to talk about, for example, the .NET Micro Framework, which is something we have had for a while, but that runs on very, very tiny systems and is still .NET in terms of C# and those kind of semantics. But of course, you can use Node.js, Java, and so forth across the system. So that's the way we look at it and drive it from there. Not going to do that again, because you by now know this, the story. You produce data, you consume it in various forms, you share it, and then you might send some commands back in order to optimize stuff. That's the kind of architecture. There will be other things on there. So we are talking to lots of people that want to build on top of this raw infrastructure that I walked you through, because right now this thing doesn't care if you send device information, telemetry, whatever. It simply consumes data, processes it, and sends some data back. It doesn't know. But there will be people, including Microsoft, that will add intelligence on top of this that says, I know this is a device, and I know it's a device of type light bulb. And in order, if I see this behavior in the light bulb, I can do X, Y, Z. Again, that's where a lot of intelligence will be added, but I just walked you through the raw platform that makes communication, eventing, storage, analytics happen in various ways. So how do you get started? Again, it's not necessary to always start from greenfield. In most scenarios, it's actually not feasible because you have existing stuff that you need to connect, need to hook up, and so forth. Utilize services. If you want to use the cloud, it's a very convenient way to start. If you end up in the public cloud, is depending on your strategy. Most likely, we will see a lot of customers pick a hybrid strategy in this one, where they take the cloud as a buffer between the devices and the onslaught of data, maybe do some higher-end analytics in the cloud, but persist the data on-premise for regulatory or other reasons in order to make decisions. And then generate new insights. Start with simple BI, and then grow yourself into Hadoop, machine learning, depending on your desires and capabilities as well. Blah, blah. I love builds. I always get confused when I click too many times. Again, we already did all that. But the goal is start with connecting stuff and collect information that you already have. If you're starting a brand new business, lucky you, just put connectivity right in there and think about what is the data you want to collect. Just to give you an insight, the Xbox team, Xbox One, they also thought about telemetry a lot because they're looking at it from both, is the system working, what's the performance, and so forth. The way they did this is they collected, they instrumented everything, whatever they could think of. They collected or instrumented the entire system from the state of your system, how hot it gets, and so forth. So there are thousands and thousands of data points they could collect. And then what they're doing is they're sending a configuration query down that says, here's what I want to collect. And sometimes it's very lightweight because it's just health. Is the system working? Is it not getting too hot? Is the network connectivity good and stuff like that? If they detect an issue, they send another query. They say, increase the data collection on this point. That's fairly sophisticated, obviously, but think about instrumenting your code, whatever that means, in terms of device, application, and so forth. Instrument more. You don't have to collect it all, and figure out a way to make it configurable so that the cloud or your service can effectively control what's being connected. So that's a thing that we have done in Xbox, and we are seeing other people doing the same thing, where they say, I don't know what I'm collecting, so I'm going to instrument everything, and then I'm going to configure the instrumentation when I need it and increase the data collection at areas where I'm interested. Again, if you have a simple device like a light bulb, not much there, so don't have to think about that. But most of scenarios I've seen involve a more complex environment where this kind of strategy might be useful. Lots of other tracks, information here, but again, from my perspective, Clemens's Event Hub is a very good session where he will go into the details. I'm sure the stream analytics people are here. where I think that might be a useful thing. If you haven't looked at ML and Hadoop and so forth, very useful, the Power BI guys. And then Steve Teixeira. Teixeira is T-E-I-X-E-I-R-A, Teixeira. Very, very complex name. I don't even know where he's coming from. But he will talk about Windows IoT and what we're doing there. And most likely he will show you this Arduino board that everybody wants to see, saying turn on a lamp or something like that, which I don't do. As always, more resources to be found. And if you liked it, tell us. If you don't like it, tell us too. I'm interested in your opinion about this topic in general, the presentation, obviously. Don't blame me for the food or the location, because that's not my choice. I got lost too. And so from that perspective, I appreciate you listening, and I hope it gave you some idea what this IoT thing is about, what the IoT platform that we are building currently and shipping piece by piece is about. And for that, now we can open up for questions, because I have 3 minutes left. So if there is a question, happy to take it. And again, if you have specific questions, scenarios that you would love to chat about, I have, I think, 15 minutes for the next, until I have to get to the next session, because I'm delivering right after this one again. Not this one, different topic. Okay, thank you very much, guys, and enjoy the rest of TechEd.